time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning, Redmond.
Good morning, Patrick. It's been a pretty good week in fishing right around the country, unless you're in New South Wales and covered in a little bit of water, because...
What about that?
What have they done in New South Wales?
I tell you what, they've walked... Every New South Welshman, they've walked under a mirror and accidentally crushed a black cat. Because the natural disasters that have occurred over the past, like stretching back to 2019 when there was the horrific fires that pretty much everyone's forgotten about now because of what the global pandemic that happened, you know,
and then the rain
straight after it. Like, people are still recovering from that, yet there's this latest natural disaster that's being declared. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a lot of water. And I know we've said it's great to clean out rivers and whatnot, but I think they've been well and truly cleaned out, Pat, because the amount of water to fall out of the sky, like record amount. I actually witnessed it on the news during the week, not that I'm a news watcher, but I happened to turn it on, and there was a horse walking through the water, and it was literally, swimming, walking, but it was up to it, like just below its mouth. Like, a horse stands quite tall, if you didn't know, Pat. So that's like just on a normal road. Like, it's, you don't, until you see the pictures, you don't, a bit of rain, harden up a bit, but when you see a horse up to its nostrils in water trying to walk through a road that was a road, it sort of wakes you up a bit to see how much rain they've actually had.
Unbelievable.
Disgusting.
The other natural disaster, or whatever the opposite to natural disaster is, that Land Cruiser enthusiasts, the 300 series orders, the wait time and production times now are years, not months. Quite extraordinary, given how the production capacity just is in no way capable of matching the demand for these cars. And if you're looking at the second-hand market at the moment, you're looking north with all models, 100 grand plus. It's quite astonishing to see the Japanese, obviously Japanese-owned Redmond, the brand saying... Apology for the suspension of order. Thank you for considering our vehicle. Land Cruiser has been very well received, not only in Japan, but in other countries around the world. We are currently suspending orders because we've received orders that greatly exceed our production capacity. Now, this links obviously to the chip shortage that we're seeing worldwide, so a lot of car manufacturers are experiencing this, but... Wait times in Australia already 20 reportedly months. 20 months.
Yeah. So what happens from here though? Does prices keep going up? Like, so, you know, just a standard,
yes,
just your V6 Land Cruiser that have been selling for, say,
104, I think just, it was starting it. Yeah.
Like ridiculous amounts of money,
yes,
for these cars.
Yes.
Do they just go up again?
Well,
like the old V6 Saharas. Well, not when I say old, they're only last year's model, but like a year.
You're looking at, there's plenty of those, like 200 grand plus.
Yes. Are they just going to go up? Are they going to go up more and more?
Well, they can, but I think, from my understanding, they were putting some mechanisms in place. This is Toyota National around price hiking from dealerships. Now,
delivery fee
is the interesting one. I think car suppliers, so the car yards, whatever, they're able to put a delivery fee that can pretty much be anything. We've seen that with the Corvettes in Australia. I think Corvettes are around 160, their new model this year, and yet you're seeing, you know, $40,000 delivery fees depending on, you know, what dealership you're using. So I think the price hikes there are hard to manage, but certainly the challenge being with some of these dealerships, and it's pretty dodgy, but what they've done is they've driven them on roads and then they're charging them out as either like a used car, but it's 30 grand more than what your retail is. But, you know, how do you guard against it? I think the other thing will be is those that do have orders in that will have first access to these cars. There was discussions around limiting the ability to then on sale after you've purchased them, but I think that will be quite difficult to police in the Australian market. We've seen it overseas. We're seeing it with Ford and their Lightning And their Lightning Pro, which I think is released slated for 2023, that you won't be able to on sale, or there's mechanisms around safeguarding that, so you know, to protect against the price hike. So it's an interesting space at the moment. Quite clearly, you drive around any car yard at the moment, Redmond, they're all bare. It's unbelievable.
Car and I bought that new car, in April, a few months back, and
Mitsubishi, the Outlander?
Yeah, we bought the Outlander, and it was, I'm not joking, it was, we got so lucky. We walked in, and they were all around that, 4 to 8 month wait, depending on the model. And we didn't want top of the range model, we didn't want bottom of the range model, because we have kids, and we know things get destroyed quickly, but we also wanted to have a couple of things in the car that we wanted, like the extra air vents and whatnot. And then just, we got so lucky, we literally walked into a dealership, and a person's finance fell through the 10 minutes before we walked in. They literally said, well, if you pay for this, put a deposit down on this car now, you can literally have
that
this car.
Available.
And the chances of you actually getting a car, normally you would never believe a salesman telling you
no.
That little
particularly
pitch there,
a car salesman.
Especially a car salesman. You normally say, right, oh, he is talking a load of rubbish here. We've done our research.
Doesn't exactly invoke like the most amount of trust when you walk into a car dealership. This is the only one left. Apart from the building next door, there's 300 available. But in this room, this is the only one available.
In your colour.
Like in your colour.
And well, this is the thing. We actually got the car in our colour. It was the middle range. It was about right. It was pretty much what we were after. And literally looked at car and I said, all right, we've just got to pull the trigger on it. Like, we've been looking for 3 months, like as in trying to find her the car she wanted as a family sort of car.
Yeah.
And we'd done our research. I said, the longer you wait, that's just more months. And it went from being a 3 to 4 month wait to an 8 month just by waiting those couple of months while we're deciding our cars. And most people say, take your time in buying something. Don't take your time in buying a new car. But we ended up buying it, and there was nothing. We could barely test drive a car because there was just
there was no
demo. Like, oh, no, we've got a demo on this model, but no, nah, that the model. Well, I want to test something yet.
I'm not actually interested in the two-door model, mate. I've got two kids.
I want a car with four doors. So, yeah, it was the market's out of control.
The 2023 Land Rover Defender price and specs have been released. There's been a price rise right across the range of up to nearly $6,000 in some of the models, with some features no longer available. Once again, because it's that slightly, it's an 8-seater now, the 130, they're priced from 124 onwards. So once again, we're talking a seriously expensive car, but it has been Land Rover's most successful
it looks cool.
model. It looks fantastic, it looks cool. But that's an expensive car. So the car industry continues to be under significant pressure, Redmond. We're interested in it because of the towability of the vehicles. But when it comes to fishing, and let's get into it now.
Hold on a second. I've just gone into the article you sent me about that.
Yes.
I've had a lady pop up in the right-hand corner to try and
sell
me a car.
Do you reckon they're not real, though?
Should I ask her back, is there one available for 3 years?
At less than $130,000.
All right, I'll let it go. I'll hit X on that bit. Where are we up to, sorry?
I can get a 12-foot aluminium boat for that.
12-foot aluminium boat. Well played.
Your week in fishing. Let's talk about it. Because we've discussed over the last few weeks, we keep getting reports of really big whiting. You keep talking about them. We've had a lot of feedback. Can you talk us through from start to finish, the planning of the big trip, the gear that you use, where you're catching them? If you don't have the ability to fish for these in a boat, where's a good place to start from land? So let's talk big whiting.
So big whiting, just big whiting. That's what you want? No small stuff? We want those big bangers. Big bangers.
Like forearm sort of thing.
Righto, kidney slappers.
But my forearm, not yours, because then we'd be looking at the...
I've gotten
probably
pretty small.
Throwing those back.
I've gotten pretty small, haven't I? I got a tattoo done on my arm a little while ago. I should have got it done now. Like,
yeah, I was
going to say,
wait.
Half the price, sorry. All right, big whiting time.
They would have been like, we can use a small pen for this.
They did. all right, where are we at? We're at big whiting. So
let's talk
favorite time of the year is now.
Yep, okay.
It's my favorite time of the year, winter. Now, you will get big whiting through your summer months, don't get me wrong, but... the reason people tend to target big whiting through your winter months is to do the fact that the There's not a lot of, not a lot of other options available, I guess, like there is through the summer months. You can go for a kingfish, you can go for a tuna, a gummy shark, school shark.
And there's flathead. Still tuna at the moment.
Oh, there is still options.
You're going to spend big hours on the water.
And it's cold.
It's going to be cold and windy.
Yep.
Versus, you're talking, if you get your timing right, you don't have to be out on the water for a long period of time to have a really good couple of hours fishing.
You don't. And I've been fishing with Finn, my son, quite a bit lately. He's only two. And just, I don't want to be out there for hours, but we're catching fish every time we go by specifically targeting those times. Now, big whiting, close to an ocean is the ideal way to explain it.
So if you're fishing in a lake, then you want, or an estuary rather, you want to be close to
the runner. If you catch them in a lake.
You want to be close to the mouth where you're getting significant water movement.
Traditionally, yes.
Yes.
So, for example, Western Port Bay is a place that you tend to catch those bigger whiting closer to the ocean.
Yep.
Port Phillip Bay, where I do a lot of my work, down to the southern end of the bay is where you catch traditionally your bigger King George whiting. Don't get me wrong, you'll catch big whiting at times throughout the bays and up top of stuff, but I'm talking about on averages and how it works. And then you move into the ocean. So you've got places like out the front of where I live in the ocean, you get massive whiting. Out the front of your place, Moggs Creek, your dad loves catching his big whiting up down off the headlands up there.
But they're spasmodic at best.
They are. And then you push further into South Australia and whatnot. That's where your big King George whiting come from. Your oceans with islands as such. So we're talking, not necessarily islands, like we're talking just structure that hold those weed beds. The reason I say islands is just traditionally, you got Tumby Bay, you got beautiful big islands right around Tumby Bay.
Got some good reports this week in the whip around, actually.
Tumby Bay. There you go.
Decent fish being caught.
There'd be big whiting in there because it's the home of it. And how you want to target them is, you want to use slightly heavier leader because you're often going to be fishing those, like I said before, that weedy, reefy area, not traditionally weedy sand. It's going to be sand mixed amongst it, but reef, big whiting will hold on these reefs. So I like to up my leader to that 15 to 20 pound rather than that sort of 12 to 15. Yep. So up in a bit, just so you don't bust your rigs off. The hook size for me generally goes up to a size 4. So you can get away with a size 3 if you want, but size 6 worm hook is the one that I average use. But if I'm specifically fishing down south, I want a bigger gape in the hook because they've got quite a big mouth when they open their mouth. So especially like a 50 centimeter fish, so a slightly bigger hook. Squid is by far the dominant bait. With those school fish you get, pippies will tend to work really, really well. And don't get me wrong, the big fish will let you pippies just as good, but if you can save your cost, the squid will work just as good as well, as if not better than pippies.
We're going real as fresh as we possibly can get when it comes to squid, or what do you
not
like to go with?
Not phase on it, to be honest with you. I always like frozen bait. Frozen squid, sorry. Yep. Frozen squid for any species. I've spoken about this on the show. I love when you... Do you know when you freeze... We'll start from the start. You know when you catch a calamari and everything's quite clear on it? Like the tentacles are clear, the tube's nice and clear. Where when you freeze it, you know how it brings out that white. Dense white?
Yep.
Yeah, that real, real white. It's dense, quite dense. And that's what I like to use for the visibility side of things. I reckon it definitely helps. So frozen bait. And now the number one thing that I could not strongly recommend is a burley cage. Burley cage with pilchards in it. It's smashing it up. Just smashing it up. With a mincer, well, I use the baseball bat. I crunch it up, drop it down to the bottom, pull it up half a pull. If you're in a slower tidal area, so if you're in the ocean, bring it up a couple more pulls. But if you're in tide, keep it close to the bottom to have that burley trickle along the bottom as that tide rips past that burley cage.
Because we knew we were going to discuss big whiting, we'd had a few questions with our social club around burleying and buying straight out of your BCFs, your Anacondas, Tackle Worlds, whether it be tuna oil and then getting your pellets and then just throwing that in, and why that isn't as good, Aaron, as actually putting the effort in and using, it should be self-explanatory enough, but you know, is that good enough when it comes to burling versus using, you know, your skeletons and salmon, you know, your fish extras that you've caught on other trips, you know, why can't you go the simplest and most time-effective way of burling?
In a non-tidal area, so a place like the ocean where the tide just trickles a little bit, you got areas in the tide that pull hard. Even like a place like Clifton Springs, which is in Cryo Bay area, that there's non-tidal. So you'll probably get away with pellets and a few things that you've just suggested, and shell, pippy shells and whatnot. Because the tide doesn't spread it out, it sort of falls and holds in that one area, and you can hold fish there. But for me, I'll always stick to my pilchards.
Yep.
Now, I'll always stick to them.
So put the effort in.
Yeah, just put the effort in to buy the pillies and smash them up. Like, if you start to use too much salmon and all that, I find when you use a big fleshy block, I know it comes out a certain rate, but once you get, you don't want rays and stuff coming in too. So if you start using, people go, oh, bluefin tuna makes great burley for whiting. Maybe a little bit of like, and when I say bluefin, I'm talking your offcuts, so your bloodlines and et cetera that you throw out. You don't want to waste it. So I use it for a bit of burley. You might chuck it in the freezer and chuck it in the pot next time, but I won't load that up with just pure tuna because the smell off tuna is so strong. I don't want rays and stuff coming and sharks just constantly coming through my burley cage to spook the whiting. So I just find the pillies a happy medium. They do smell a bit. They break up nicely, but they also run out quite quick too. So you're not going to have it lingering for hours. So you've got to keep on top of it, keep shaking it, keep updating a few handfuls of pillies into it every 5 minutes, sometimes 40 minutes, depending on how the fishing's going at the time. So just make sure when you're chasing them, you need your burley cage. You need a nice long leader. If you're fishing tide, if you're not fishing tide, shorten it up a little bit so you got a bit of feel. But always, an extended paternoster, so your hook's out the back of your, at the back of your sinker. I'm not a fan of pre-made rigs, as in buying rigs off the market with a little bit of fluffy stuff on the end of it. I'm not a fan of that. I don't think it catches you any more fish, and it costs you $10. So you can make one in 3 minutes, and that's being conservative. And 3 minutes, and you can have the same rig or better, and you know you've made it. And it takes your stuff all time to do it, and it's going to work. Rather than paying $10, you cast it out, then you bust one off on a rig, oh, there goes $10, and your first cast fishing on a reef.
Yeah, because it's sat in the store for however long, the loose.
You just don't know what you're buying.
Gotten
some
loose
stuff are fantastic, don't get me wrong, in the slightest, but I still would never buy it. Oh, yep. It's not hard to tie a whiting knot. It's literally you put a loop in your line, and then you tie a hook on the end. You can either join it with a swivel or swivel or with a double uni knot at the end of it, and it's up to you.
We'll finish off the end of this chat around catching big whiting in winter after the break. We've got a huge show of Real Adventures coming your way this morning. We've got the whip around. We'll find out what's biting in your part of the country, and Lee Rayner joins us to chat about some big winter trout. All that and more on Real Adventures this morning.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. We're chatting big winter whiting. Now, we are up to, and if you missed the first start of the chat, first half of the show.
Unlucky.
You can head to our Real Adventures website or our Real Adventures app, and you can get all our podcasts or simply go to wherever you get your podcasts on Apple Music, iTunes, all that sort of stuff.
We on all that?
I think so.
I've made it.
We better be. Spotify. All there. Anyway.
You probably just made that up.
Big winter whiting. We've gotten to the rig. We've finished that. Now what's the next step?
So just that swivel. I don't use swivels. I use a double uni knot. But it's crucial to put the bait on properly, because if you don't put your bait on properly, it'll spin. And if you don't use a swivel and just run a uni knot, it'll spin your whole leader up.
Now, Aaron's spoken about this at length. Now, putting your bait on properly isn't about trying to pin it through the hook 4 million times until there is not a scary bait that is no longer not attached to a hook. The way that these fish feed, you can pin it at the top and then it almost moves like a bait fish, and that is all that you need.
And if it's a whiting, you'll catch it. Yep. That's my theory on it. If it's a rubbish fish, quite often fishing this reef where we fish leather jackets and parrotfish, it'll have teeth marks out of your bait. And that's how you know it's rubbish fish.
Yep.
Whiting,
which you didn't
want
to have to bring up anyway.
No, I didn't. But it takes your fish. It'll take the squid more often than. Sorry, a whiting will often. Nine times out of ten, you'll catch a whiting if it bites. But if it's the rubbish and you're getting those picks and you can't hook it, you know it's not a whiting, because you just know. Like the whiting you'll catch, and it won't. They won't just. When you put your bait on 100 times, the only thing it does is spin your leaders, and you just spend more time trying to retie these rigs and then trying to, I guess, get it to sit in the water properly. There are a couple little methods, little tricks, if you feel like you're getting smaller whiting, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about big whiting today, and if you just pin it once, you'll have no dramas. The next stage is getting your baits into sand holes, Pat. I think that's probably the most crucial. Fishing these reefy weed structures, you need to get your boat on a sand hole. Now, I've got a table in front of me that I'm looking at the moment, and I probably want a sand hole maybe three times the size of this table.
So this table's probably, it's about a meter circumference.
Meter and a half. Meter. Yep. So you want to cast into something, say 3x3 roughly, if you can get a sand hole amongst bait, amongst reef or weed, that's what you want to get your bait into. Number one, the whiting will be sitting on the edges of it and they'll come into the sand to feed. Number two, the rubbish fish won't come out of the reef as far to get your baits. They will in times, but they won't. Once the tide gets going or if the whiting are there, they won't come out. You'll tend to more just catch whiting. But not only that, snagging, etc. So when I'm fishing down south, I'll put people on marks and they'll say, oh, we caught nothing. All we got was snags. I'll go and fish next to them and they'll be off the mark by, say, 11, 12 meters and I'll sit next to them and I'll be whiting after whiting because I'm on that sand hole. There's specific sand holes in certain areas and I'm not a mark sort of person for certain fishing pat. Like a lot of my marks up at St. Leonard's and in general areas, just general area. But specific ocean fishing amongst heavy reef, you must get on your marks. Use your eyes, sonar, visibility, whatever you need to do to find where these sand holes are. And then you'll catch so many more whiting than what you will just plonking on top of a reef and getting snag after snag. So make sure you get your boat in the right spot. And that's pretty much the end all to catching these big whiting in the ocean. And I guess at the bottom ends of your where the ocean meets the bays and inlets, I should say.
Beautiful work, Redmond. Next week, we're going to be focusing on big offshore gummy shark. Let's get to the whip around and find out what's biting in your part of the country. All thanks to J.Co. Sydney, your next great escape. Let the adventure begin with J.Co. Sydney Redmond.
Heading to New South Wales and the rain is back, out of control. Like we spoke about at the start, not a heap of reports this week, but there was a massive school of salmon out of Marimbula that I've seen. Huge schools, not just one, multiple. And they were big fish, like 1 to 3.5 kilos. So some thumping fish amongst them. Just cast those metals, get up nice and high on a headland and you'll be able to see visually where these fish are. But the rain's going to play a massive effect now because the water is just going to turn to poo, literally.
How long is it going to take to clear?
The way it's looking, I got no idea. I don't even think I can answer that.
Not within the next week.
It's not looking good. So, and the rain, I think the whole week is predicted to have rain again too. So, I don't know from that. But on a positive note, there was 150-odd kilo bluefin that was caught north of Burmie on the canyons. Now, that's a big fish, big bluefin tuna, and that could be the start of the run. I haven't heard of much more. I've seen some longliners that are getting fish out wide, but the run of bluefin on in the east coast, so the southeast coast of New South Wales, I should say, that's going to run soon. I don't know. What are your thoughts on... Like, I used to, as a Victorian, go to New South Wales to target these big bluefin, Pat. I used to go to the shelf and travel 100 Ks in a day out there to cube up these bluefin. But the way that it's unfolded here in Victoria, now I feel a little bit sorry for New South Wales.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's going to have the same, I guess, I don't know.
The draw card, the drive for me to go there.
I've got no interest in driving 10 hours to Eden or Burmie.
You do have different weather, though. I suppose if you go there, you're going to get slightly warmer than, say, reversing it where you've been to Port Mac over the last few weekends.
Well, I reckon I would rather drive to Port Mac, which is 4.5 from my joint, and fish 5 kilometres from the boat ramp.
I agree with that.
Then drive to
10 hours.
And then another 2.5 hours, it could potentially be, just to get on the other side of the shelf off a place called Eden.
I don't
know what it's going to do. Anyway, we won't go into that too much. WA, some huge mackerel getting caught out of the Montebello Islands and big sand whiting caught in Carnarvon, and they were caught on little poppers and worms. And they were really...
We love a bit of hard body action for some sand whiting.
You do. Shane Menforce does. Did I say his name right?
Perfect.
I'm happy with my work there. Speaking of Shane, South Australia, we've mentioned just straight off the top here, Port Mac barrels are on fire. Now, my question...
They're still the best place right throughout the entire country. If you want big game fish...
It's ridiculous.
That's where to go at the moment.
How long can it go for? I've written it there. Like how long? This is... I was speaking to a friend during the week because we were thinking about going up this week, but I can't be bothered, which is how bad is that? Like we've had such a good season. I literally can't be bothered going right now.
Well, you don't have that same urge because it's
I've caught
a lot of fish. It's not like I've missed out.
Have not missed it, but it is hard seeing people up there getting threes. You're like, I want to go. And then you realize you're going to drive 4.5 and pay for accommodation and then pay for fuel. It adds up. But how long can it go for? It's been months upon months already. Like it's been 4 months of just consistently good fishing. Like the odd couple of days that are quiet over a moon maybe here and there or when there's boat traffic. But other than that, it's just been red hot.
Tumby Bay, there's been good reports of some decent size whiting. It is once again wind and weather dependent. That's fishing most of the time. But if you bothered to go out there, there's some great fishing to be had at the moment as well.
There is a bit of a problem with the whiting fish at the moment. and I'm hearing two different aspects of it. The bloodworm run. Now, you're in a South Australian, sort of.
Yeah.
The bloodworm.
Is that
explains
definitely.
A lot. Explains a lot. Bloodworm run. Have you heard of it before?
No.
So I didn't know much about it, but I did a bit of reading. Now, it's just basically a type of ocean worm that plagues in the ocean. They come in and they just, when I say plague, like it's an understatement. Like there's thousands of millions and billions of them. Like it's just out of control. Some people are saying how much it affects the whiting squid fishing because they just absolutely thrive on these. And it's nearly impossible to actually catch fish because they're just always full because they just eat at their own leisure. But others,
and they're thick things as well.
They're a big thing, and they're a big creature. And they're an unbelievable bait for basically every single species. Everything eats these things. And I'm hearing other words, people saying, I've never had a drama catching fish when the bloodworm runs because they're just feeding like crazy.
Yeah,
so I'm hearing multiple reports. So if you are an angler out there that has actually experienced this, send something into us via our social media pages, Real Adventures on Instagram or Facebook, because I'd love to hear from you on your opinion on this because I haven't experienced it. You're a fake South Australian, so you haven't either.
Is it a good time to go and like try and stock up on the bloodworm?
I reckon it would be. I've seen they'd have to freeze well.
100%.
They'd have to.
If you are interested, personal daily bag limits of 4 litres. That's a lot of milk. It's an interesting way of...
I can't stand how they say... It's like they say 10 litres of mussels.
It's an interesting way of
you know how to use it? Take something of that value. So how we do it, if we're taking something that's valued at, say, 10 litres, we take a 10-litre bucket. That's how we do it.
Yeah, right.
So it's 10 litres. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. Port Nolunga Jetty as well, Redmond. There's been salmon up to 3 kilo caught there.
We're really dragging this report out, so I've got to hurry up here. Bluefin, eagle hawk next going well. Queensland, some huge cobia caught out of Harvey Bay right now. Cobia, I landed that cracker there. That camp that time. That was a nice fish.
That was a fish in a lifetime.
Taylor are going very well on metals on the beaches out the front of the Tweed as well. And we spoke about that recently. Just find those gutters sort of either side of the Tweed and you'll catch plenty of Taylor at the moment. They're literally in really good numbers, so get amongst those. Have we got time for the social club?
We do, but let me just finish off I need the outro.
Okay, apologies.
That was the Whip Around. All thanks to JK Sydney. Your next great escape. Let the adventure begin. Let it begin with JK Sydney. Now you can go to the social club.
Righto, where we take your questions from social media. So make sure you do send them in because we do love your questions. Patrick.
Love and engaging.
We will do our best to... answer these questions for yourself. Patrick, you want to take it away?
Yeah, boys, any tip for chasing the winter reds in Port Phillip Bay? Thanks, Trent. Now, we spoke probably a month ago. You caught some really nice snapper, but you haven't been fishing for them since with big time on the water.
Can I just answer this? Just don't do it. It's too cold.
Yeah. Are they there?
Yeah, they are there. Not something. I did this heaps as a kid.
Yep.
Heaps. I used to make Dad back me in at sort of 5 p.m. and pick me up at 10 p.m. It's always a night thing for me around a full moon. That's gotcha. When I like to do it.
Yep.
I used to get some thumping big snapper.
So your advice is fish them at night.
Fish them at night around the moons. That's my ideal. And on a tide change around the full moon or new moon, that's what I like to do. Just your normal baits. Squid will, in my opinion, will be your best bait through the winter months. But in also my opinion, it is hard to do. Yep. It is hours upon hours, and then you might have one good night where you get 1, 2, or 3 fish. They could be big, though.
Yeah.
8 to 12 kilo, like big proper fish, like big fish, fish of a lifetime. So it is worth doing, but it is cold, and it is not that rewarding until you get a fish, which sometimes you might... I know a friend that fished the whole winter last year and consistently fished him, who has done well in previous years, did not catch a single winter bit red, like a decent red.
Yeah, it's hard work.
Very
good luck, Trent. Give us a bell and let us know how you went or go. When pumping bass yabbies, what are you actually looking for? I wouldn't mind getting the kids out and getting some bait. Cheers, Lee. Now, this works well because it's just off the back of the school holidays. They're wrapping up this weekend.
Thank God, because I'm struggling to get around the supermarket.
What are you looking for when you do hit the beach in search of bass yabbies?
Just you want to find holes. Bass yabby holes or sandworm holes. That's what you want to find.
So to the naked eye, are we talking like pencil width, like, aren't we?
Go your pinky finger and have a look at your nail. That's probably the size of it. It's probably a good example. That's the size of the holes. And you'll quite often see next to them, you'll have like where they've actually dug the
little spit of sand, yeah, don't you?
Just like the little offcuts, we'll call it, off the side of where they've been digging. So that's
the excavation.
The excavation work, as Finn would say, digger. He loves his diggers. Do your kids like diggers?
Love them.
What's the obsession with it?
Actually, George needed guns at the moment. We're off track here.
My kids like swords from Ninja Turtles.
We're off track.
The bass yabbies are fantastic bait for everything.
Yep.
Whiting, brim, like all those estuary sort of fish as well. So even trevally, all that, all the likes along there. They're a tremendous bait. They can be hard to get on hooks at times, very hard to get on hooks, but they work really, really well. They're so productive. You can catch so many fish with them. Well worth it if you want to catch more fish than your mate next year who's gone down and bought a bag of pippies. They will catch more fish. But once again, it is cold, wading up to your knees at times. Get a shopping basket. Don't take one from Bunnings like I did. I mean, don't take one from Bunnings because they work really well, the Bunnings ones, Pat. You can push the sand through them, shake it.
The complaints for this show come from the comments that you make.
But it's valuable. So make sure you pump your bass yabbies into a basket. Give it a shake. The sand and whatnot will pull through. You can also buy a sieve from the supermarket that works just
as
good, Pat.
There we go.
And Safeway's profiting. But it's you can shake it and your bass yabbies will end up in there and put them in a bucket and a bit of water. I've had them stay alive for nearly a couple of days. So they're pretty hardy at times, but they're also, I'd have to say, the best bait for all estuary species.
Beautiful work. That wraps the social club. We take your questions from social media. Send us in a direct message. Put a comment on any of the photos we've posted. We'll do our very best to get back to you. Plenty more real adventures after the break. We're catching up with Lee Rayner from Fishing Edge.
All aboard for Dometic. Make your next adventure effortless with the Dometic Go Collection. Just pack, stack and go.
It's time for All Aboard for Dometic. Go on your next adventure at Dometic.com. Our special guest this morning is Lee Rayner, host of Fishing Edge. For more information on Fishing Edge, head to www.fishingedge.com.au. The problem is we talked to Ray Lee off air.
I reckon if we actually recorded our off air chat, we'd get more listeners because it is pretty funny.
We end up talking rubbish and I try and make sense with an intro that just goes up shit creek really quickly.
I somehow compared trout to a plastic bag. You compared me to a crap wine.
And here we have Lee. Good morning.
Hey, Lee. How are you, boys?
We're good now. We've got you on. And
can you straighten
us
out?
We've got to keep it PG whilst we have you on air versus off air.
I think if people heard our off-air conversations, they'd just be like, you guys need help, like proper help.
I don't think they need to hear us off air. I think they all think we do anyway.
Lee, the shit canning that you were getting before we got you on about your Lego.
Instead of fishing.
And I stuck up for you, for those unaware.
Thank you.
Hats on Lego, man.
If you head to Lee's Instagram page, there's a cracking photo of some Lego, and I'm a bit of a Lego geek. Aaron's clearly not. You clearly are, Lee.
100%. You know what? Aaron's not a Lego geek, though. It's just because it's way too far above him. Like, he'd struggle with Duplo.
I can't argue.
You're the age three.
The reason I was into your league is because I was scrolling through your Instagram to go through your latest plastic bag captures, and Patrick's a Lego lover.
Love it.
But I must admit, I did appreciate the trout that you've been catching with your partner. Take us through what you've been fishing lately and a bit of damage you've been doing on the lakes.
Yeah, so wintertime, cold weather. I love my trout fishing, grew up doing it, boys, but I like fishing the Western District lakes in Victoria. So obviously your Purram Beach, your Bullamurray and all that, but there's heaps of great lakes around, and I've been fishing Tullaroop, which is way out past Ballarat. And I like that lake because it's just like Jindabyne, which is what I grew up fishing, and there's seriously big fish in there, and that's why I like those Western District lakes. There's big trout, there's big redfin. You're not going there for numbers, you're going there for quality. And we got lucky enough, well, when I say we, Bronny got lucky enough to catch a 7-pound brown there a few weeks ago. So that makes a trip like that worth it.
63 centimetres, Lee. Like, this is a monster.
Yeah, big fish. And these things carry the weight, Patty. They've got, because they feed on, in those Western lakes, they're all full of smelt and minnow and all that. So these fish just stack on the condition like really, really well. So they weigh more than they probably should for their size. And that fish in the photo you can see is just fat from head to tail, just in absolute prime condition.
How much work do you do with the sounder in finding these fish as well, Lee? Because one of the things that you're really well known for is the use of technology, how you embrace it, but using it in the correct way. Is that a big part of, around fishing for trout?
Like his Lego, like his Lego car, good with technology.
That's more of technology, which I know nothing about. Now, I use my sounder flat out, boys, like flat out. And it's like Aaron when he's tuna fishing. You dial in on the little things. Yes, there's the big obvious things, but it's the little things. I'm always looking at what the bottom's doing. I'm looking at water temperature, because water temperature can vary quite a lot, even in a freshwater lake, from one side to the other, from all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, like it's interesting that those fish I've been catching there in my last two trips, 80% of the fish I've caught have come in a 300-metre stretch of the lake. So that's I'm just working back.
That's where the sewerage runs, Lee.
That's exactly right, mate. I don't care what's pouring in there. If that's where the fish are, that's where I'm going to be. So, but that's what it's about. I just sort of, you know, you find that one little bit that looks a little bit different. Yeah, you're marking a few more fish there, but what was holding these fish in this part of the lake, it was actually like a little bit of a choke point. It was sort of between two points up against the old riverbed, and it's an area that sort of confines the fish. And if I'd probably put it into a more layman's term for a saltwater fisherman, it's just like you do, Aaron and Patty, when you're offshore fishing for those gummies, you're fishing those contour lines and you'll find a drop-off, right? But then you try and find that bit of a point or something that juts out, which it's basically like an intersection that the fish have to hit and then go around, and these trout are doing exactly the same thing.
You've got on your social media here of your Simrad with your downrigger. So you're obviously downrigging for these fish. How are you actually targeting these fish off your downrigger?
So there's a lot of guys just say they don't like trolling because it's not active, but when I'm downrigging, mate, I am constantly changing the depth of my downrigger bomb, which is changing the depth of my lure. And that's the great thing about a downrigger. If I see a fish at, you know, I'm at 10 metres and I see a fish down at 13, I can just lower the bomb down to 12 or 13 metres and my lure's behind the bomb. I generally put my lure about 20 feet behind the bomb. And that lure then pulls down in front of the fish, and it's just a very, very active way of targeting them. But the other thing that trout love to do is they love to come up and look at the bomb. So if I see a fish come up and look at the bomb and you'll see this line come up, I'll actually generally raise the downrigger bomb a metre or two, and then that makes that lure shoot up a metre or two, change action, move a bit faster, do whatever, and that gets you a lot of bites just doing that.
Lee, there's a bit of a misconception around using downriggers that it's only for experts, but the beauty of it is you mentioned depth. Because it can be so accurate, if you're just getting into trout fishing, it's a perfect way and something to add to your fishing library, because it's simple to use.
Mate, it is so simple to use. And I feel more confident, Pat, having two rods out if I've got one on a downrigger, just because I know I've got one that I can put it wherever I need to put it. But I also know that my lure is at an exact depth, and that's often important. You know, if I know that I want my lure to be, you know, I'm fishing 20 foot of water and I want that lure to be 2 foot off the bottom, I can sit that downrigger bomb, know that lure pulls 3 feet deep below that bomb. You know, I'll set my downrigger to basically say 15 feet and know that my lure is very, very close to the bottom. So it's a really precise way of fishing. But for kingfish, for marlin, like everyone sends sinker baits down and drifts around hoping to try and catch a marlin. You mark a marlin at 50 metres. If you've got a downrigger set at 45, you get the bite every single time because you're also pulling the bait. You're not drifting it slowly. You're pulling that bait or lure past the fish and he's got to react to it. So you get a better bite out of him.
Dumb question. What lure are you running on the back of the downriggers for these trout? Like,
are you mixing it up? Yeah, what's the...
Flat out. Like I should put a photo up of after a day's trout fishing, the lures that are sitting on the back deck. Like, I'm always changing lures. It breaks my heart to say it. They are such a good lure, and I've caught thousands of trout on them over the years. But I hate using pink Tassie Devils because it's a bright pink lure that just should not work.
And it does.
What do you reckon that big brown trout ate?
Yeah, I haven't done a super lot amount of trout fishing, but All my trout have literally been on Tassie Devils.
Yeah. You feel like you need something that's like more imitation or... But they're just...
Fancy and cool.
Oh, God.
Oh, so frustrating. But look, the other one I'm doing a lot of this time of year, because we're coming into that spawning period. So the fish are aggressive more so, like where they can be aggressive. And so a smaller lure will get a food bite out of them. A big, big, big lure will get a... aggression bite out of them, like they're actually grabbing that lure basically to say get out of my way because they see it as a threat. So 18 centimeter original Rapalas, 11 centimeter Rapalas, things like that, like big lures. So and it's interesting, quite often on the downrigger with the rod loaded up that's bent over with the line going out of the clip, you'll see with a very big lure, you'll see the rod tip bounce and it's actually a big trout nudging the lure, basically saying get out of the way, like get out of here, and they'll nudge it four or five times and then they just smash it. So that's good fun because, you know, when a fish eats an 18-centimetre lure, it's going to be a good one. but the other one that's two boys, like those lakes are full of redfin and there's some monster red, like you're talking over 50 centimetres in them. And with the downrigger, I can get my lures down deep, but in a lot of the point, I can keep them over the schools of redfin. Like you'll mark a bunch of reddies and you'll be like, oh, quick, lift that downrigger like 3 metres and you can keep your lure above them so you catch less of them. So that's the other bonus to running a downrigger. I just think they're a great piece of gear. You can run your burley pot off them when you're whiting fishing. You can do heaps of stuff. We do not use downriggers enough in this country because there's so many forms of fishing that you can use them for that everyone overseas uses them flat out. We just don't.
Yeah. Hey, Lee, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We always love chatting fishing with you. Extremely authentic but detailed in terms of how you go about targeting the fish that you do. If you want more information from Lee, head to fishingedge.com.au. Lee Rayner, our special guest on Real Adventures this morning.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Red's Tip. We don't have much time. What have you got for us?
No, we don't, but cold, miserable outside at times during these winter months. Some beautiful days out there during the day, nice and warm, but I just said nice and warm. That's a complete lie. It's still freezing during the middle of the day. But if you are bored at home, head up to your local tackle store or even contact, to be honest with you, I'm 30 years old, so we'll say an old man, my old man, for instance. Quite often, they will have sinker molts. And just kick back with a nice stubby, put a barbie on or a lamb roast and make sinkers for the day. Do it safely though, because I actually can't stand the smell of it. It is a horrible smell. Shocking. Make sure you wear a mask. And we all got masks these days, Pat. So make sure you wear a mask while you're doing it because it is horrid. I've got people that don't and they've lost the plot. But it's make some sinkers. They're too expensive to buy.
They are.
If you want to say a 10-ounce sinker, you can be up to like $4 a sinker and you can lose a lot of sinkers very quickly.
And it's a good activity to do at home.
It is. Get the kids into it.
No, do not let the kids near molten lead.
Okay, well, don't do that. But put the lamb spit on and have a couple of beers and make some sinkers during those wet Sundays because it will say when the summer comes along for us here in Victoria, you'll be kitted out for those big kingfish, dropping sinkers down. You've got marlin. You've also got your gummies and whiting. You'll be kitted out, ready to go. And it's not going to... Every time you call into the tackle store and you grab a handful and it costs you $12, it bloody adds up over the 100%. Summer. So making sinkers is a great thing to do this time of the year.
Beautiful work, Redmond. That is Red's Tips. Time for the flying gaff. And I was in Geelong the other day, walking along Eastern Beach, and I saw a jet ski out, and he wasn't having fun. He was fishing. And we've reviewed jet skis previously on this show, and there is a place for jet skis fishing. It's just not in Victoria or South Australia or Tasmania in the middle of winter because I haven't seen...
Did he have a wetsuit on?
He actually did. He had a wetsuit and a jacket. I haven't seen a sorrier-looking human. Because he had a wet ski.
You've been good today.
Yeah, I've actually had a shocker today. This might be my worst show.
I like it.
He had a wetsuit, a jacket, and it looked like Boggs gumboots, but they were the really small ones. So it was only the bottom end of his foot. It didn't go halfway up his calf. So and I honestly looked at him. Because every other time I see someone in a jet ski, I'm like, man, that guy's having fun. And I saw him and I thought, that just looks crap.
Did you see him catch anything?
No, he had his hood on, so you couldn't see it. And he's there flicking into the... I mean, good on him, but he's there flicking into like around the moorings.
Pontoons and that, yeah.
Yeah, and it just didn't inspire me to think, you know what?
But what about if
my next purchase is going to be a jet ski to fish?
But what about if you see a fella in a kayak doing it? Because there's hundreds of them out.
Well, my argument would be a kayak is going to cost you a few hundred bucks depending on where you go versus a jet ski is going to cost 15 grand.
More. Some of those skis are like 40 grand.
So this week's flying gaff goes to those fishing in winter in a jet ski. That's why you buy a boat.
I accepted it.
That's why you buy a kayak.
I'm going fishing.
It's time to go fishing. Thanks for your company this morning. I promise we'll be better because there was some rubbish today.